This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I'm not sure that I know what I'm talking about this morning, because learning to adapt to a foreign culture is an ongoing process, something we continue to learn. As I thought about the subject, I became aware that the Apostle Paul, as he moved from country to country, place to place, was very much culturally aware as he presented the gospel. We read in Acts chapter 17 that while Paul waited for his companions to meet him at Athens, his spirit was stirred within him when he saw the city wholly given to idolatry. In verse 22, he continues, and on Mars Hill, Paul speaks to the people, and he says that, "I perceive that in all things you are too superstitious." We get the picture of Paul, while he was waiting, walking through the city, observing, learning about the people, how they lived, what they believed. And by the time he spoke to them, he came to them from the context of their own culture. Later on, he mentions the writings of their own poets. Paul was versed in the Greek culture. It was just interesting to me to notice that. As we go from our home country to a foreign setting, I think it becomes necessary that we also learn to adapt. Now, to define culture is defined as the total set of attitudes, values, goals, and practices shared by any specific people group. Every country has its own unique culture that is formed by the traditions and values that have been handed down from one generation to another. It's formed by the geographical location and its climate, by the political environment, by the language, the religion, the way of dressing, the education, the economic situation of a people. All of these things make us who we are. And usually we're probably not even aware of the influence these things have in our own lives. Within our own culture, we're comfortable. We feel at home. And we don't even realize why that happens so often. I remember some years ago when we as a family traveled from Costa Rica to here to the States by land. And we were here in the States for a couple of months. And on our return trip, when we crossed the border from the United States into Mexico, our children suddenly threw their hands in the air and they whooped and they said, "We're home!" We were still a long way from Costa Rica. But the Latin atmosphere made things fall into place. All at once, they understood. They were home. When a person leaves his home country, his native culture, and enters into another country, the language may be different. The food is different. People think differently. They do things differently. And in many undefined ways, we feel out of our comfort zone. We suddenly realize that we don't know how people think. We're not sure that we're accepted or understood. The cultural differences that we feel may leave us feeling lost, disoriented, tense, confused, sometimes frustrated. That's what we call culture shock. yesterday when I came into this building, I experienced a little bit of that. You know, oh, all these people, what are they thinking? How do they think? It's different from where I come from. So the missionary's goal is to adapt to the culture that he's been called to serve in until he can feel that he's reached the goal of adaptation, of till he feels that he's comfortable in a new normal, till we feel at home. Now, this doesn't mean that the missionary needs to reject the culture that he's coming from, but it means that he does become comfortable and is able to function correctly in the culture of his residence. Some people adapt more easily to foreign cultures than others do. Some people find cultural differences fascinating and enriching, and they immerse themselves completely, as completely as possible at least, in their new culture. Some people see spending time in a foreign culture as something romantic and heroic, but as life becomes routine, they find cultural differences frustrating and develop an aversion to them. They refuse to give up the idea that their own way is better and turn sour toward the culture and the people that they're trying to relate to. Some people are so entrenched in their own way of thinking and doing that they hardly even notice that the differences exist. They do their own thing regardless of the culture they're in. And then they don't understand why people don't understand them. They are distant. And that's a very frustrating situation as well. But today I'd like to look at a few ideas that can perhaps help us as we learn to adapt to a new culture. Number one, I think I mentioned this yesterday in my presentation for you, those of you that were there. I think it is important that we remember that culture is simply the way people do things. Every culture represents its own group of people. And when we Christians look at culture, we have to realize that because people are fallen, all cultures, except for the Christian church, all cultures are fallen cultures. All cultures give expression to the sinfulness of man. So we must remember that no Christian can ever become totally acculturated, regardless where we are. And although the gospel is adaptable to any place, and it takes on the local flavor of the culture in which it's it finds its roots, it also confronts cultural sins and changes them, changes culture. One of the things that we confront first, probably, as we move into a different culture, is the language. The missionary's goal is to communicate the gospel, and to do that, he needs to be able to express himself in the language of the people. Learning the language becomes a primary concern, and he believes that once he can communicate verbally, he'd probably be able to understand the people and their culture. But I think it's important to remember that learning to communicate effectively is more than learning to speak the language. The cultural context in which the language is spoken is equally important. To understand what people are really communicating, we must learn how the language is used. For example, the emotion expressed by the words we choose give color and feeling to what we communicate. just as a little example, the difference of response, if I speak about a lady that's fat, she's thick, she's, what could we say, voluptuous. You know, some of those terms I get slapped. Other terms can be appreciated because the words we use carry with them not only definition, but they carry feeling, they carry emotion. And these are things that we need to learn as we learn a new language. Not just because the dictionary says this is the definition means it's the best word to use within the context that we're using it. So those are things we need to learn, the emotion that's expressed by the words. We need to learn the meaning of idioms, of expressions, and how they're used. They often help to express the underlying ideas, the principles and the values of a culture. Colloquialisms, slang. Now, I'm not necessarily advocating that we go to a new culture to learn the slang, but we do learn the culture as we learn to understand the slang terms that are used. If we miss the subtle nuances, double meanings of a language, we're left with vacuums in our understanding. I have seen in Costa Rica numerous occasions when national people will be having fun speaking to a gringo. That's a North American. And they will be speaking correct Spanish to the North American. But they're having fun and they're laughing because he's totally oblivious to what they're trying to say or what they're saying. Because they're using colloquialisms, they're using words in as they understand them. And the American thinks he understands, and he's quite a ways from it. We need to learn to understand humor as it's expressed in the new language. Well, we can't go into that necessarily, but to learn the humor, how words are used to express humor is important in learning a language. Just speaking the language of the people does not mean that you're understanding the deep feelings, the insinuations that they communicate, something that the nationals take for granted. And this is only learned with time and interaction with the people. There are stages of adaptation. I was thinking of this as I was preparing for this presentation. And as I was doing a little bit of research, I discovered that the things I wanted to express were actually things that others had seen as well. And so I felt like, well, I probably am on the right track. You know, a two-year term missionary can usually put up with about anything if he knows there's an end in sight. If I know I'll be going back to my own comfort zone after that. But to make foreign culture your home long-term is different. Long-term missionaries find themselves going through stages or phases of adaptation. And it's helpful to understand this before you go so that when it happens to you, you realize that you're normal. Number one is what is called the honeymoon stage. I'm saying the first 2 years, and I realize that this is very general and it can vary very much between people, depending how people respond to the new culture. But the first 2 years are often considered the honeymoon stage. Everything is new, it's romantic, it's interesting. The tendency is to throw yourself into becoming one of the people. Do the things the way they do them. Try to make yourself believe that you are now a part of this new culture. Let me tell you, you're not. Sometimes people even develop a negative attitude toward the culture they come from. I've seen that happen quite frequently. Because now we are here, we are throwing ourselves into this new experience. The second stage is called the stage of hostility. By the end of the second year, the newness, the romance, has worn off. And the missionary is faced with the long-term possibility of what he's living. It was fine for a while, but now, how ignorant these people are. How inefficient. How illogical. Rice and beans is okay for a while, but every day, three times a day, suddenly the things of the past come back to tempt us. Now everything in the new culture becomes negative, and the things we left at home become ideal. This is the hardest stage of adaptation. At the end of the fourth year, we're ready to enter into the third stage of adaptation. Now we're ready to begin to experience the new culture in a way that's more rational, it's balanced. We accept the fact that we are foreigners. We recognize that we do miss things from our home culture. And we're okay with that. But we also recognize that our new adopted culture has a lot of positive things as well that we can enjoy. And we learn the rules and the customs and become comfortable with our new home. And we began to feel at home. Oftentimes, missionaries get stuck in the second stage and leave. Unfortunately, people that could really contribute to the cause are not able to handle it. It's unfortunate. One of the things that's, I think, extremely important in learning to adapt to a new culture, and that is that you are confident of God's call on your life. God's call to a foreign country calls for an act of faith. It's imperative for the missionary to be convinced that he is where God has called him, where God wants him to be. Living in, adapting to a different culture is not easy. Like I said earlier, the romance of the new culture very quickly wears off in the face of reality. Adverse circumstances can become obstacles, or we can use them as stepping stones. Conflicts among missionaries themselves try our ability to give and take. Many missionaries find they can't handle it. Someone said that to go into a foreign country, to become a part of a foreign culture, requires a strong character. And so when you put a number of strong characters together, why do you laugh? because you know what I'm saying. There are many times when the only thing that keeps us going is the fact that we are convinced that God has called us where we are. I remember 1 month after we moved to Costa Rica, back in 1968, there was a volcanic eruption 12 miles from where we lived. And suddenly we found ourselves refugees, along with thousands of other people that were evacuated from the area where we lived. Not knowing the future, not knowing the language, very limited in funds, we left our homes with one change of clothes. We didn't know if we'd be coming back. The first time we returned to our homes, we found that there was not a green blade of grass anywhere. Everything was covered with 4 inches of sand and ash. It looked like a moonscape. And then it had rained, and the weight of the sand, the heavy wet sand on the roof of our house, had caused the roof to cave in. My parents had just bought a number of these old cotton-style mattresses for our beds. But the rain had come into the house and soaked through our mattresses, and the water was dripping out the bottom of them. You know what happens to cotton mattresses when they get wet? The cotton just balls up. We had to pitch them all. We didn't know what to do exactly. I remember that my father received advice from a friend here in the States, and he told him something like this. He said, "My advice is to take the first airplane, the first boat, the first bus, the first train, or even an ox cart, and get out of that place." I'm sure I was young at that point. I didn't carry the responsibility. But for my parents, it was a real issue. What do we do? And I remember my father and another brother getting together and discussing this. And they said, "No, God has called us to Costa Rica. And if that's the case, God will also see us through." And as we look back today, that experience helped us integrate into the culture like very few other things could have done. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, the Apostle Paul speaks of his call to be a missionary, and he says, "For necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. A dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me." God has called me to take the gospel. I'm committed to that, and woe is me if I don't do it. I think that's an important part of becoming, of adapting to a new culture, is to know that this is where God has called me. Over the years, I've become more and more convinced that the most important aspect of learning to adapt to a new culture is attitude. How we think about ourselves in relation to those we serve. And I also believe that most of us generally are not very aware of the attitudes that we have. We do understand how we respond to circumstances, but we often do not understand the underlying attitude that causes the response. You know, the missionary prepares to leave home, his normal, his comfort zone, to take the gospel to a people in a foreign land. I want you to just think this through. You're sitting at home in your comfortable living room, and you're making preparations to go to the foreign land. He sees his ministry from the perspective of his own culture. He sees his identity as a North American missionary. And without consciously being aware of it, he takes for granted that his culture does things right. And that he is able to teach others. After all, aren't we from the most developed country on earth? The most powerful country on earth? We don't think those things through, but those things are back there somewhere. He's also convinced that his own Mennonite understanding of Christianity and religious practices are right. Aren't we from an Anabaptist background? Don't we have 500 years of history behind us? We should have something to say, shouldn't we? With that subtle, unconscious mindset, he will be going to serve among foreigners who are not as developed. In other words, people who are poor, ignorant, pagan. This is all preparation to leave. Again, unconsciously, we form an attitude about ourselves in relation to the foreigners that we will be ministering to. The Apostle Paul addresses this attitude in Romans chapter 2. He says, "Behold, thou art called a Jew, Anabaptist, Christian, and restest in the law, and makest thy boast of God, and knowest his will, and approvest the things that are more excellent, being instructed out of the law, and art confident that thou thyself art a guide to the blind, a light to them which are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, and hast the form of knowledge and of truth of the law." Probably the way a lot of us unconsciously think of ourselves. Because we're going as a missionary to teach. But a very subtle and yet a very important change takes place somewhere between the time the airplane leaves Dulles International Airport until it lands in Managua, Nicaragua. As the missionary disembarks from the plane, he needs to recognize that his identity has changed. He has now become the foreigner. You were back home in the living room thinking of going to a foreign land. And as you get off the airplane, you have now become the foreigner. To the culture that he has entered, to the people he's come to serve, he is now seen as the North American. And at least in Latin America, North Americans are stereotyped as being rich, interventionalist, and arrogant. Accept it. That's the way you will be looked at as a North American. He's now the oddball. He's now the one that speaks the different language. He's now the one that does things differently. His identity now makes him the stranger, the foreigner. Here, he's the ignorant one. Some years ago, a group of high school students from here in the States asked to come to Costa Rica. They wanted to do like a work project, and they wanted to experience a cross-cultural time, an exposure to foreign missions. These young people were considered intellectuals. There were computer geeks that were riding the crest of the wave in technology. They were preparing themselves to go out and meet the challenges of life in this world. And so to give them the experience they were looking for, we sent them to the most primitive of the churches in Costa Rica. Well, actually, it wasn't in Costa Rica anymore. At this place, the National Brethren were in the process of building a church building. They had gone back into the jungle with chainsaws and cut out the lumber that was to be used to build it. So the National Brother that was in charge thought this would be an opportunity to have the lumber transported to the building site. So he took these young boys back into the jungle, and he showed them how to take two boards on their shoulder on one end and drag the board to the building site. It was quite a distance. The hot tropical sun was doing its job. And by the time they got to the building site, they were sopping with sweat, tongues hanging out. The native brother said, "This is never going to work. They can't do it." So he took them into the house, sat them down to the table, and went and got a bag of beans. I'm going to have them sort beans. In Costa Rica, they plant kidney beans, and they harvest them by hand. They thrash them by hand. Then they take the beans, and on a windy day, they let the bean fall, and the wind takes the chaff. But there's always dirt and things mixed in with the beans. So to get them ready to eat, the wife will sit at the table, and she'll put the beans on the table, and she'll separate the beans from the dirt. So at least these guys can do this. So he put them there and showed them how to do it, and they started, you know. They had a little pan down here on their lap. He went to the leader of the group and said, "These are the dumbest guys I've ever seen. They can't do anything." So you see how perspectives change depending on our environment. Now, if this national brother would have been taken out of his environment and taken back to the United States into that high school and sat down in front of a computer, then who would have been the dumb one? Okay, which of the two were the dumbest? Very possibly their IQs would have been equal. But neither one necessarily was dumb. Each one had been formed by the realities of his own culture. So, we need to be careful. Attitudes about ourselves. Humility. The change that takes place between Dulles and Manawa is very important. The missionary sees himself. The way the missionary sees himself can make or break his success as he adapts to the culture he finds himself in. And as we enter into a foreign culture, we need to be humble. We need to remember that we did not choose to be born in the developed country, nor did the national brother choose to be born in his underdeveloped country. And we must not be offended by their concept of what we represent. Politically, the relationship between Latin America and the U.S. is like the proverbial marriage, where spouses don't necessarily like each other, but they can't live without each other. On a more personal level, the Latin Americans are very friendly, they're tolerant, and very accepting. But we must remember that perhaps because of their poverty and underprivilege, or at least that's the way they see it, the only thing they have is their pride and their dignity. Therefore, they tend to be very highly sensitive to any attitudes of superiority that they sense from us. For them, it's important to be friends with the North American. And until we learn to know each other beyond our cultural biases, the relationship is sometimes like walking a tightrope. It's important that they feel that we recognize our need of our new friends and neighbors. We need them to help us learn. And it's only as we open ourselves to learn from them that we earn the right for them to hear us. It's important to know that. We need to learn to appreciate differences. Some years ago, we were in Ireland. One of the first things I noticed was that the people drove on the left side of the road. The first evening we were there, as we traveled along the very narrow, winding Irish roads, it was dark. All at once, I see the headlights coming in front of us. coming towards us. And this car was coming, he was driving on this side of the road. From what I was used to, it was the wrong side of the road. And I stomped on an imaginary brake on the floorboard as the car calmly passed by on the right side. And I said to the driver, I said, "Hey, you guys drive on the wrong side of the road." He said, "No, we don't. We drive on a different side of the road." Sometime later, I was in Australia. They drive on the left side of the road as well. Because of circumstances, I was asked to drive a lot of the time we were there. And I discovered that it's a thing of a mindset. You very quickly adapt. And they drive just as orderly and just as safely as we do. It's just different. Different is not necessarily wrong, nor is it necessarily inferior. My daughter told me just recently that one of the valuable lessons that she has learned through her cross-cultural experiences is the fact that there's more than one way of doing something right. A different point of view is not always wrong. And as we learn to understand the new culture, sometimes we discover that in the situation we're in, it's actually better to do things the national way. Attitudes about food. You know, food is a universal equalizer. In almost any culture, sooner or later, our relationship with our national friends brings us to food. People of any culture enjoy sharing food. The way we respond to national food says an awful lot about how we are adapting to the culture. There are methods of preparation. There are flavors and textures in food that are different from what we're used to. We don't always enjoy the new dishes immediately. Sometimes it takes quite a bit of bravery to try something new. But it's worth the effort. When you receive a gift of food, receive it with grateful enthusiasm. There's something personal and vulnerable about a gift of food, because it shows you what the other person likes, who he is. And to reject it is to reject the person. That's the way it's taken often. They also feel honored and accepted when we return the gesture. To go even further, invite the neighbor lady into your kitchen and have her teach you how to prepare that national dish. That's a very high honor. And as you do that, they interpret that as saying, "We like you. We want to be like part. We want to be like you." Don't deny your foreign identity. Some people try to do that. But it's usually counterproductive, can even be obnoxious, because from a distance, you stand out as a foreigner. The nationals see our differences just as much as we do, and we need to recognize our own limitations in the new country in which we live. It's important that we learn to distinguish, understand priorities. To adapt to a new culture, we must understand and appreciate what is important in that country, in that culture. We often miss this subtle but basic element of culture. We don't understand why people do what they do, and we judge them from our perspective. For example, how we see time. Latin culture is more laid back than the U.S. North Americans often accuse Latins of being lazy. In the afternoon, men are often at home with seemingly nothing to do. But there's more to it than that. It has to do how we see time, how we prioritize time. Now, for the North American, culture sees time as money, and money is what makes the world go round. We judge people by their productivity. If people don't produce, they're a liability. We don't like the rat race we're in here in the United States, or maybe you do. But we continue in it if we want to compete and if we want to keep our lifestyle, we've got to stay in it. Our goal is to lay up enough so that we can retire and enjoy the last days of our life at least. Meanwhile, we have to take yearly vacations to make it through, at least to enjoy part of life. A Latin sees things differently. For a Latin, time is relationships. What good does it do to have an affluent lifestyle if you can't enjoy life and if you can't enjoy people? Latins see North Americans as cold materialists. They're so busy, they don't have time to enjoy each other. And I've discovered that in church relationships, one of the first criticisms Latins will have with the North American missionary is that they don't have time to spend in brotherhood. Both sides need to realize that the real issue is not so much the haves and the have-nots as it is an issue of priorities. Latins need to learn that they cannot have the affluent lifestyle if they don't want to live the rat race. North Americans need to learn that they cannot enjoy the laid-back relationship type of lifestyle without also lowering their living standard. So make your choice. I think probably we could find some medium ground somewhere there. Punctuality is something that North Americans struggle with in Latin America. But we must remember that time is relationships. And a Latin will not break up a conversation with a friend just to be at a meeting on time. He's doing something more important. How we see money in developing countries where a hand-to-mouth existence has been the norm for generations, to learn to save, to plan, to invest are new concepts. These are all things that we need to learn as we enter into a new culture. And it helps us to adapt as we learn right attitudes, as we learn humility, as we learn priorities, and we can enjoy the new culture as we become a part of it. I see my time's up. I've got to quit. There's a lot more we could say, but God bless you.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.